I'm just on a different level physically, and I think a big part of that is just due to the training. It's been a complete shift as far as what I'm doing in training day to day. It's like completely actually opposite of what I used to do.
Everybody, welcome to The Move. We are here with George Hincappy and Johan Berniel. I'm Spencer Martin from the Beyond the Peloton newsletter. We are discussing Torino Adriatico and Paris-Nice, the dueling stage races that happened last week and end of the weekend. Torino was won by Jonas Vingegaard in a pretty dominant performance that doesn't speak well to anyone else trying to win the Tour de France. We'll break that down, though, and then get into Mateo Jorgensen's, the young Americans, I would say pretty surprising and impressive GC victory at Paris-Nice. We actually have Mateo joining us about halfway through the show to discuss his win. So we're very excited to talk to him about that. But first, we'll talk about Torino, what we learned there before getting into Paris-Nice with Mateo. But Johan, what are your quick takeaways from Torino? I mean, I feel like a little overshadowed by Paris-Nice, which was a super exciting GC race that came down to the very end. They do that course is so good at kind of building into the final day. A lot can change on the final day. You had a lot of parity at the GC level there. Torino, it was kind of either a sprint stage. I guess you did have the time trial at the beginning, which kicked off the TT helmet fiasco that we lived through for the rest of the week. But it's really just TT sprint and then Jonas dominating the mountain stages. I mean, what did you take away from this race, big picture wise?
I don't know if you've checked the cost of a new bicycle right now, but it's as much as a motorcycle. Me and my friends are all talking about that, and we just can't get past it. When you could get a gently used, barely ridden, almost new bicycle from Bicycle, B-U-I-C-Y-C-L-E. It's really an incredible interface of what you're looking for. You put in the style of bike you're looking for, the size, what kind of components, whether it's electronic, mechanical, what brand, even if you know that far in advance what you want, what kind of wheels, boom, it spits out everything that fits your criteria, and you could be on the bike you've always wanted. Also, you could clear out that garage. If you have a bike that's been laying there for, and you haven't touched it in a year, it's probably time to sell it and turn it into the bike you always wanted. And at Bicycle, they actually have an offer where you can remove, they'll remove the seller fee for our listeners. So all you have to do is enter WEDU24 at bicycle.com, and they'll remove that seller fee. Today's show also brought to you by Mando, and I'm not making this up. It was 5 years ago or so, my daughter got on me for using a deodorant that had aluminum in it. So I went online and bought like 10 different brands and narrowed it down to one. I did a test on all of them, one that, you know, and one that I thought, in my opinion, was the best until we became partners with Mando, and they sent me some of their product. The old one that I had chosen from that test of 10 products, threw it out, no longer need it. And I'm a big fan of Mando's products now, and they are aluminum free. So they fit that criteria. You should check out their starter pack. It's perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, a cream tube deodorant, and two free products of your choice that you can pick out from there. And again, special offer for our listeners, $5 off the starter pack with our exclusive code and link. Use the code WEDO at shopmando.com. That's shopmando.com. And the code is WEDO.
The conclusion is that Jonas Vingegaard is definitely on a super high level. It's difficult to say and compare, but I dare to say that he's on a higher level than last year at this time. Let's not forget, you know, last year he did Paris-Nice and he got beaten like fair and square by Tadej Pogacar. He was not even second, he was third in Paris-Nice. So this year in Torino, those two big hilly stages, he was, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else. I think that's the main takeaway. Other than that, Juan Ayuso confirms that he is the guy of the future. I mean, beating Pipo Ganna in the time trial, on a flat time trial, and then the only guy that could at some point stay with Vingegaard only for a little bit, but you know, he finished second in GC. I think that's definitely a good sign. And then, I mean, I really, really impressed with this young Mexican Del Toro, Isaac Del Toro, who is, you know, 14 GC, 20 years old. We haven't seen the last thing from this guy yet. George, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to mention that, Johan. Not only incredibly impressive ride, but apparently struggles a bit with positioning, starts a lot of these climbs in the back, or maybe that's his style, a la Ryder Hegedal, starting in the back of the climb, not fighting, saving energy, which to me is very risky, but working his way through groups at his own pace, essentially climbing just as fast overall time as the best guys in the race. Very impressive to watch him, young kid and UAE. I mean, they're killing it on the young kid program right now. Their best guys are all under 25 years old, and you know, they have the budget, they have the long-term vision, and it's going to be hard to crack, you know, that dominance for a while. But very impressive about both of their young riders. And also, as we all know, these races, both Tirreno and Paris-Nice, are where the favorites start emerging for Milan-San Remo, which is next weekend, of the first World Cup of the year. And for me, Jonathan Milan made an incredible race, second or third in the time trial, the first time trial, won two stages, lots of power, climbing well. To me, he's got to be emerging as one of the clear favorites. And Trek has won that race before.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay, I like it. That's why we're on here.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree because I think one of the big favorites is Mathieu van der Poel, who hasn't raced yet. His first race is Milan-San Remo. There's other riders, but I think Jonathan Milan, the leader of his team, is the big favorite, in my opinion, Mats Pedersen. I think he's one of the biggest favorites for Milan-San Remo. Jonathan Milan, I think he's going to struggle with the distance and the Poggio. Of course, you know, I mean, if this would have been 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would say, okay, you know, it's, but nowadays we see that there's 3, 4 riders who are so good that, you know, it's not a bunch print anymore. When is the last time Milan-San Remo was a bunch print or a group of 20, 30 riders? I mean, there's, and you know, I think with a guy like Van der Poel and at the start and Pogacar at the start, I guess. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think, yeah.
I'm
yeah,
not sure definitely. About that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think sure. He is.
Yeah. So I don't think it's going to be, it's, you know, it's going to be very difficult. I was talking to one of our, you know, yeah,
I agree, Johan, but it also really depends on the wind conditions. If, say, for instance, if we have a headwind up this presser or a headwind up the Poggio, completely changes the dynamics of the race. And historically speaking, you need to race before Milan-San Remo. Of course, these big favorites like Van der Poel, they don't need to race anymore. They
just historically, show up ready to George, rock. You just said it. Historically, yeah. It's agreed. It's changed.
The game has changed for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, now that we're talking about Milan-San Remo, I mean, my favorite. You know, we don't know what Van der Poel's going to do and how he's going to show up. For sure, he's going to be, you know, come in all guns blazing. But Mats Pedersen is my big favorite because I think that he's, you know, he's incredibly strong already the whole season. He was really strong in Paris-Nice, and if you look at last year, he's the last guy who was just not able to make it with those four big engines. So I think that this year he will be able to make it. And he's
the team, you know, Trek bringing on Lidl, and their big talk was about, we're going to bring a lot more money in. We want to be one of the top 3-4 teams in the world. They're showing that right now. They're very successful at the start of the year. They got Tom Skujens got second in Strada Bianca. Mats Pedersen is obviously riding amazing. Jonathan Milan. I mean, they have a stacked squad. Past winner of the Milan-San Remo as well will probably be their Stuyans, I think, or not.
Yep.
So I think about their squad. They will be going in with a ton of confidence, not scared of anybody. So for me, I like the momentum that they have right now. And I'm going to go slightly with the, I'm going to go with the Italian because it's an Italian race and
George, but
the
look
pressure
look,
is all in him.
We keep saying, you know, things have changed, you know, it's kind of strange to see that, you know, historically, and I insist historically, you know, it was Tirreno and Milan, Tirreno and Paris-Nice, as you had to do one of those two races to win. You know, now we're talking about probably the two biggest favorites, which are Van der Poel and Pogacar, and none of them has done either of these races. and they're going to be there, and they're going to be in, on the podium. One of them is going to be on the podium of that race. So, but yeah, I agree. I mean, Jonathan Milan, listen, he wins two stages, beating, you know, really, really fast sprinters. Jasper Philipsen, Tim Merlier, Phil Bauhaus, you know, they were all there, and he beats them. And then I don't know. I mean, I don't know if a guy like, for example, if Visma, what about Olaf Kooi? I mean, can he make it? He's super fast.
We've underlined how exciting Torino was because we've rocketed through and we're discussing Milano San Remo after about three takeaways. But George, I was thinking about this too, about Milan. You know, I've started to daydream about Milan winning Milano San Remo, Italian rider, big Italian sprinter. Like he kind of looks like he's a statue that just happens to be on a bike. Yeah. It is tempting to think about, but I have a hard time imagining he can get up the Poggio fast enough. Like they've gotten so fast on the Poggio. Last year was unbelievable. Like, you know, if you look at some of the estimated power numbers required, that seems like a little bit of a stretch. It would have to be some funky day with a stiff headwind. Maybe Little Trek gets two riders over. If you can get two riders over the Poggio, you can win. Come on, guys. It's easy. That's all you have to do because you're going to have one attack and one sits in the group. But I don't know. I mean, are we glossing over the other Italian? Like, is Filippo Ganna the sleeping giant here?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a possibility. He was very close last year, has the power numbers. I just like the physique of a guy like Jonathan Milan, big guy. And we always talk about the suppress in the Poggio, but we don't talk so much about the battle for the suppress in the Poggio. And you want to be a big, strong guy, not afraid of positioning, not burning up all your energy to stay in the first 5-10 guys. Somebody like Jonathan Milan, he can do that relatively easy and not get guys bumping into him because they'll get bounced right off of him. I like his physique. I like the, you know, the role that he's on. And I mean, like you said, it's Milan San Remo, anything can happen. They've been flying up the Poggio every year faster and faster. So it is a long shot, but I still like him.
Yeah. But let's talk again about Jonas Vingegaard and Tirreno Adriatico. I mean, how impressive is that? You know, he started the season, won the three stages in the race in Galicia in O Gran Camino. Not the same competition, but you know, Bernal was there, Carapaz was there, Uran was there. I mean, there was really good riders there. But you could say, okay, you know, it's a secondary race. But I mean, to show what he has shown, and the way, to me, it's just he knows when he's going to go, and he knows when he's going to drop them, and he's not afraid to attack from far out. You know, it's not like he waits. I mean, he waits until the last moment. He just goes, and he has this extra gear. It seems that nobody can follow. I mean, and I think what Ayuso said was telling. You know, in the second mountain stage, he tried to follow him. He tried a little bit, and then he said, all of a sudden, I just blew up. I had to gasp for air. And he said, I'm the first of the humans.
Yeah.
Which shows how impressed the peloton is with the level of Jonas Vingegaard.
Not only that, Johan, but I feel like the communication and the way the teammates, the Keldermans, and they know each other so well that they essentially know the exact effort that they're going to do before they blow up and when Jonas needs to go, that everybody else is on the limit and nobody's going to be able to react. I mean, they've got that dialed in. And we all know Pogacar is dominating as well as dominated in Strada Bianca, but like the favorites are clearly emerging for the race of the big race in July there.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems to me like it gets more and more. I mean, we've been saying this now for a number of years. You know, how can you be so good in the beginning of the season, like straight from the gun, and then still be there? But it doesn't seem to matter anymore. You know, it's already now that there's no doubt that, you know, you can be on a super high level all that time. They do race relatively little. You know, I mean, there's guys who, you know, including the tour, they're probably going to have 40 races. Some guys have 15 to 20 races before the tour, if that. But man, and how hard these training rides must be, you know, because some guys actually prefer to train hard rather than be in races where you are at the mercy of what the peloton wants to do. And yeah, sometimes you have a stage, you know, it's headwind and they don't get the necessary work in.
I still struggle with understanding. Obviously, the training is a lot more advanced. The measuring, the nutrition is a lot more advanced. But for us, always back in the day, yeah, you can do the intervals. You can do the power on the climbs that you need to do in races. But the hardest thing, in my opinion, in races is the acceleration out of corners, you know, the fighting for position. Those things are almost not a factor to these guys anymore. They don't need it. They just do their intervals. And the accelerations, people don't understand what it's like to be in a peloton the size of a mile long, yeah, and getting slingshotted out of a corner and have to sprint full gas just to hold the wheel in front of you. Those things are almost impossible to mimic in training, but somehow they're not missing a beat. They don't need to race, yeah, anymore. They're training and they're super fine with all these accelerations and the strung out pelotons and the positioning. It's really hard to understand, but they've figured it out.
Yeah, I think we should ask Matteo. He's going to come in a little
bit. Because, I agree.
Because, you know, if you look at him, no, his first race was Omloop het Nieuwsblad.
And he hadn't raced anything.
And he was one of the strongest riders in the race.
Yeah. You know,
so basically they show up, it doesn't matter, they have the rhythm and they have the speed and they just go, you know, it's crazy.
I mean, I didn't race the level of you and George, but I agree, George. I mean, I can train all I want, but I can like feel the sickness in my stomach almost, you know, the first race of the year where you're just like, it's like getting punched in the gut, where you're just like, oh my God, trying to hold those wheels in the corners, but it doesn't seem to bother them at all. And I don't really have an answer for that.
Yeah, I know.
Do you guys feel like, I mean, these Jonas wins, they're physically impressive. I do see like people calculating numbers online. Like this is as big as bigger performance as he's doing at the tour. We should say these are shorter stages, like 3.5 hours. The demands leading into the climbs are far less. You know, it's just less of a fight. The climbs are shorter. So you should keep all that in mind. He still has a level to go before the tour. But it almost as if he like has a, it remind, it's Lance-esque in that it almost feels like he doesn't like his competitors. And I'm not saying he doesn't, I'm not trying to say that, but he rides in that way of just like, you don't need to do this, Jonas, but you're just destroying these people. Really almost just to show them a, like show them a point of like, I'm this good. What are you going to do about it?
I agree with that, Spencer. Also, it's almost like he's doing it for training. He's trying to hold these numbers and he's like, I need to get this particular amount of power for this particular amount of time. So I'm going to might as well do it in a race and win the race where most guys are like, okay, I'm leading comfortably. I'll just ride in here. But I feel like a lot of this is just, he's trying to keep his training going.
But
that's how he felt about Pogacar at the
Don't you think that that's like, I think that's proper to the actual generation and the way cycling is being ridden right now. Because if you look, tactics have become very secondary, in my opinion. And then on top of that, you know, being liked or not being liked or having friends in the peloton or doing deals between teams, that was usually the case in the past. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. They just ride as fast as they can with a team. Like Jumbo last year in the tour, you know, they had this team. They had, you know, 8 guys. They knew that they had, you know, 5 guys who could do 5 watts per kilo for 150K. Then they had 2 guys who could do 6 watts per kilo for the last climb. And then they had Jonas who can do 6.5, 6.8 watts per kilo. And basically, I think cycling has come down to this, that it's basically a numbers game, and they know exactly what they can do for how long. Tactics are, I mean, we can talk all day long about this. This is a tactical mistake. I don't think there are any more tactical mistakes. It's just pure numbers and power.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, but we read some of the reports already about Paris-Nice where Remco said he made some tactical errors by letting these guys ride away.
I agree with that.
Perhaps focusing on, you know, Primoz, obviously, and not those guys. But look, and we haven't really even started talking about Paris-Nice, but those were hard days and only a handful of guys left. If one guy goes, clearly he's got that kind of power. And so close to the overall, it's not somebody you can just let ride away. I mean, you gotta react.
Yeah. No, I agree. Do we have anything else about Tirreno? I mean, Jasper Philipsen won a stage. You know, looked like he's he's up to speed, but then he had a crash in the next stage and he probably was hindered a little bit. Phil Bauhaus, impressive stage win also, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's won a stage. Doesn't he win a stage here every year? It's like an annual Phil Bauhaus.
He won a stage. Won a stage last year for sure. And then
yeah, very impressive. The battle for the with the sprinters was very impressive. Four, was it three or four different sprinters won stages, which is not typical. I mean, usually we'll see one guy dominate two or three stages. Yeah. But it's going to make a lot of these sprints a lot more exciting. And if in the rare chance nowadays that Milan-San Remo comes down to 50 guys, that's going to be a pretty interesting finale to watch.
Any George, any insight on Cav and his abandonment at Tirreno?
Not really. I think that day was a very, very tight window in terms of the elimination, and he just wasn't feeling that great. He had a lot of travel. He was in Colombia for a month, went home for a day and a half, had to fly over to the UAE. And then fly back and jump straight into Tirreno a couple of days later. That's just a ton of travel on anybody. So I think he's fine.
And I have to be honest, George. I mean, I'm getting worried about Cav. I'm getting worried about Cav that he's not going to get to the level he needs. I know that the tour comes and it's a different animal, right? But man, cycling keeps evolving. I mean, and it seems like it's every year a tiny bit faster. And I'm getting worried, especially also because his team is not very strong.
Yeah.
Not strong enough.
I'm not. I spent time with him in Colombia. He's the main thing for me with Cav is like, how happy is he? How motivated is he? Is he having fun? And he's having a great time. He's happy. And he's got his eye on the prize. I think all of this stuff, obviously he probably wanted to finish Tirreno, but it's just his buildup. I mean, he's got one clear focus. I'm not worried.
Okay, good. Well, I hope so. I would love to see him break that record, but he has his work cut out for sure.
He's so good at that though. I used to doubt him all the time, but I mean, he feels like he can just pull. He can look so bad, so bad, so bad. Then he just pulls tour form out of thin air. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, yeah. I mean, I think he would have won a stage last year had he not crashed, and he looked terrible. And his Astana team, I thought, looked worse earlier in the year. So
yeah, that little gear mechanical was why he lost that day. 100%. I think he would have won without a doubt. And like you said, Spencer, he gets to the tour and he's a different, completely different person. The year with Quickstep, when he got last minute slotted in, I think I spoke to him 10 days before the tour and he's like, man, I don't even know if I'm ready. I don't know if I'm going. If I go, of course I'll go. I'll be happy to go. But point is, a week before the Tour de France that he won four stages and he wasn't even sure how good he was.
That's just crazy.
Crazy. Did you notice, Johan? So Philipsen looked, I thought, completely outclassed at UAE. You get back to Europe, harder stages, like smaller roads, a little bit more elevation game, and he looks better than Tim Merlier. You know, it's like, I think you're going to see that Philipsen is the premier sprinter for these like harder Grand Tour S stages. And that, I don't think that's going to change this year. I think that's the one place where you could beat Milan, you know, in harder Grand Tour stages.
Today's show is brought to you by AG1. I remember when we first started talking about AG1 3-4 years ago, and no one knew what the product is. And we were explaining it. This is athletic greens. It's something that should be a part of your routine every single day. Fast forward 3-4 years later, you can just say AG1. You don't have to show anybody the product. You don't have to spell out that it's athletic greens. It's become the standard in that daily nutrition that you need. I've made it a part of my routine every single day. I get those vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics and more. It's just a simple, simple start of the day. It tastes good. It mixes easy. It takes you less than a minute to change your habits, and it's well, well worth it. So I have to recommend you elevate your health. It's AG1. That's the best way to do it. We've been partners with them for a long time, and we want you to take ownership of your health. Start with AG1. And with trying AG1, you'll get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5-3 AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/themove. That's drink AG1.com/themove. Today's show is also brought to you by our friends at Caldera Lab. And it is funny. It has changed the habits of everyone on the show. You know, most of the team, all dudes, most of the team over 40, most of the team, all of the team did not take care of their skin growing up. And all of us out in the sun a lot, really active and just not taking care of ourselves. Now that we've partnered with Caldera Lab, I've gotten comments from my wife, my daughter. I know Lance has gotten comments. George is addicted to the product. He carries it around in his bag all the time and is applying it throughout the day. We've all got hooked on taking better care of our skin. In particular, I use a cream every single day before I leave the house. I use the Good, which is the serum at night, and it is improved. I know I don't have the best looking face here as an example, but it has improved and you should be taking better care of your skin. Get 20% off with the code WEDO at calderalab.com. You can make unforgettable first impressions that lead to charming words. You look younger. 20% off at calderalab.com with the code WEDO.
Well, I guess we have our special guest on the way. So let's see.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, Mateo.
Hey, thanks for joining.
Yes. Mateo, congratulations.
Thanks for having
incredible.
Me.
Incredible.
Congratulations. What an incredible victory. Hopefully the start of many more, but lots of young good riders have won. I mean, it was the first big victory of Miguel Indurain, so you know, you have somebody to follow there.
Yeah. The list of winners for Paris-Nice is
it's
something insane. I don't really want to even look at. Yeah.
Anyway, so how do you feel the day after, Mateo?
Actually, pretty good, I have to say. I expected worse. In the past, after the Monday after Paris-Nice, I'm usually kaput on the sofa all day. But today I've been pretty good. I've had a lot of stuff to do with, had like 6 interviews and stuff. So maybe that's just more adrenaline. But yeah, it's been feeling pretty good.
Yeah, impressive. Spencer made a great point early on in the show that you basically not only won handily, but you outrode the best riders in the world. I mean, you lost time in the team time trial, which is kind of unexpected. We didn't know if you guys just were trying not to take as many risks as the other teams, but for you to be there and ride away from these guys, we knew that you were strong. Obviously, you almost won Het Valk, but to come out and say that you wanted to get podium in Paris-Nice and then win it, incredibly impressive. Walk us through those first couple of days, what you were thinking, how you were feeling, and how everything played out for you.
Yeah, I didn't really go into the race with the expectation to win. Like, the team was not expecting that, thankfully. If they were, I probably wouldn't have performed very well with pressure the whole time, but they really would have been happy with the top 10 is what they told me in like January when we went over the race. But I've been eighth twice already, so I told them I'm not super interested in just doing a top 10. I would like to aim for at the podium is what I thought was possible, and so we kind of went in with that intention. Also knowing with that, normally with Remco and Primoz there, I don't have the level of them, so I haven't ever performed on a level where I could beat either of those guys. So I think the podium was a reasonable objective, but in the end, the week just turned out. It just went well in every aspect. And yeah, like you said, the TTT, I think, was the one day that I guess I can be, I wouldn't say I was disappointed with it, with how we did it. I think we actually had a really good ride and I was like super happy with all the guys' performance. I think we did like a good ride, but we were just kind of flicked by the conditions, along with Quickstep. They were also in the same similar start time to us, but it was on a kind of a point to point route and the wind just completely changed as a storm blew in. And then it rained also with this storm, and it just like the whole way home was this flat straight run in on a big road. And in the recon, it was like pure tailwind, and in the recon we were doing like super easy riding. We were going like 70k an hour, and then in the race we were pushing literally full gas and we were doing like 68K an hour. So it completely flip flopped on us. But yeah, I can't really complain about that. That's just how life is. And Remco was also on the same time. It was really just UAE that profited from good conditions that day. So the rest of the days went super well. And Olav also took two stage wins, which was actually the team's main objective of the week, was target the three sprint stages and try to win all of them with Olav. So it just was a magic week. Yeah.
I mean, you say, Matteo, that you're not on the level of Primoz, you're not on the level of Remco, but there was a point, stage six, Primoz attacks, you know, you think, oh, I've seen this before. I know it's going to happen here. Race regroups, you go, you counter. And I, to me, that's the moment where you won Paris-Nice. Like, what was going through your mind when you made that attack?
Yeah, you're completely right. That is really the moment where I was able to take time on Remco. And I it's funny, every time you see a race with two big leaders, like whether it's Vingegaard, Pogacar, or Primoz, Remco, or whoever, like these big super towns, people always say, oh, you know, like you can take advantage when they look at each other. But the amount of times that happens in a bike race when there's a guy who can, yeah, where the two strongest guys in the race, like, you know, are taken advantage of by a third guy is just not, it just rarely happens. But I did talk with Mark that morning on that stage, and that climb is just so steep, that Colser loop climb, that it was like worth it basically to try something no matter what we do, even if they're in the wheel, because there was just no draft. So like, yeah, I basically just agreed with Mark that if there is a moment of hesitation, just go, like, don't even think about it, because it just is always going to be worth it. Even if nothing happens and it all comes back together, they all have to do the same effort. So it just worked out and it was good timing. And it literally is what happened. I think Primoz had attacked and it annoyed Remco. Remco had to close the gap on him, and it actually cost Remco, I think, a lot there to close the gap. And then once he came back, both of them were, you know, they both kind of canceled each other out, and both of them thought, well, no, it's up to you to now close the next gap. So I think it just was the right timing.
Not only that, but you had super narrow, windy, wet roads that I feel like you guys took real advantage of, getting every second you could in those corners. I mean, once you get, like they say, out of sight, out of mind, it was going to be really hard to bring you three guys back no matter what. I mean, were you taking big risks, or did you know what was coming? You knew the course before that, or once you got the gap, it was just what was going on in your head there?
Yeah, that day I did know all the roads. I had, this stage was planned for last year, but it was canceled in Paris-Nice, but I'd done the recon last year and I remember doing this climb. And yeah, I, like you said, over the top, it was like these crazy neighborhood roads they found. I don't know where they found these roads, but it was like right, left, up, down. Just some good roads for attacking, really. And basically once Brandon and Skelmos got up to me, it was like, at least Brandon and I had the exact same intention for the day, which really helped out a lot. Like we both were just fully committed to taking time in the GC on Remco and making the most of the day. And so we were fully committed. Skelmos wasn't really, he was going for the stage, and that hindered us a bit, but thankfully Brandon had great legs and we're both bigger guys, and it was basically false flat down to the finish. So yeah, I think we were able to take really big advantage. And also behind, I'm sure when you have Remco and Primoz in a group, the other guys that were there probably were leaning on them a lot. So I think just, yeah, good group dynamics worked out in our favor. And I think the day that made the difference.
After that day, I mean, you still had two really tough days ahead. You were super strong at this race last year. Like, I remember you were in that Jonas group behind Pogacar on the final day, I'm sure putting out massive numbers. But you, in my mind, you looked unshakable those last 2 days, like always in the front going into the descents. Like, what, you don't have to tell us, but I would guess that you're around like the same fitness as you were last year. But what's the difference being on Visma versus Movistar? Like, is there just an internal kind of emphasis on like, be in the front, do this, do that? Are you getting more bottles? Like, what's the big difference this year that's allowed you to go from eighth to first?
Yeah, I'm just on a different level physically. And I think a big part of that is just due to the training. It's been a complete shift as far as what I'm doing in training day to day. It's like completely actually opposite of what I used to do. I can't tell you specifically what efforts and stuff we're doing, but it's like just radically different than the training I used to do. And that, yeah, is just one aspect, but that in combination with like having just, yeah, the past 5 months I've had like a perfect diet basically, just because I've been with the team so much and they always have everything controlled while you're at camps. And then at home I've been, yeah, staying on track also. So I think I'm also quite a bit lighter, and yeah, just everything kind of has come together to the point where I'm just at a higher level. And that I didn't really know that going into the race. I mean, I felt super good at an opening weekend and was doing good numbers in Tenerife at the altitude camp before opening weekend, but it's not like you really know until I got onto into the weekend where, you know, you see those long climbs and you actually test yourself against those guys on the longer efforts where you can see, yeah, where you stand. And I think you're right. I for the first time felt like I was on the level of those guys, and that's a completely new thing.
No, I was going to say, Mateo, I know you can't talk more much about your training specifically, but would you say the training is mentally and physically harder, or is it just much more precise of a method of training for you? The workload, is it tougher, or is it just more precise and more dialed in?
Yeah, I think in some ways, I wouldn't say it's harder, no. I think in general, I'm kept a lot less fatigued. So I think the big thing is it's much more, it's just planned to a higher level of precision, I guess, to the point where, you know, you're just not getting super tired. There's no days where you finish and you're just like completely fucked. Like you do hard training, but it's all in a balance to where it's like, the days that you have hard training, you're ready for it, you're fueled for it, you've rested for it, and then you do the hard training and then you recover again. So it's like, it's very much calculated, I think, to that degree. And it's something that I have no idea about. I mean, there's like, the coaching group, they spend hours and hours, you know, pouring into it and figuring it out. But yeah, I just kind of follow the process. But the one thing I've noticed is that I'm just less tired off the bike. Like, when I'm at home, I can, you know, it's not a big chore to get up and go to the grocery store and, go see friends or something. It's like, have energy to do things off the bike, which is pretty big change, actually.
I think it's probably also I followed your interviews a bit and your way of thinking, Mateo, and when you were at Movistar, you were already pushing, I think, to be a bit more scientific and specific, but you had to do everything on your own initiative, or most of it. And now everything is done for you. You don't have to worry about it, that it's going to be done. And so that's probably, I mean, with all due respect for Movistar, you know, they're a great team and they've been, you know, in business for a long time, but I think it's still, I mean, with, you know, respectfully, a bit old school. They're trying to catch up, but I think that probably right now at Visma you see a huge difference on that part, that everything is thought about and everything is done for you. Is that not the case?
Yeah, you're definitely right. I think a big part of the success of the team is because, I think actually cycling and endurance sport in general is about like managing stress. And, it's just on my mind right now because I'm reading a book about stress, and it's like, you start to realize what we're actually doing, like what the goal of training is. And it's basically all you're doing in training is just stressing your body. And, you're doing it in certain ways to create like adaptations and then recover from those. And I think the more things that you can take off of your plate as a rider, the more successful like the training is going to be for you. So Yeah, the more time you can spend disconnected after training and relaxing, and yeah, the more you can put yourself into like a more recovery state, the better you're gonna actually like adapt to the training. And that's something that I never really realized before. I thought you kind of, if you got the workout done, then your body will make the adaptations kind of no matter what you do. But it's a lot about, yeah, your mental state. And I think this team knows kind of how to, or at least they really put a lot of effort into trying to keep you happy and keep you low stress and take a lot of the responsibilities off of you as a rider, because you already have quite a few things you have to worry about. And so I think, yeah, you just have a bit more space to do that. And then you can just adapt better to the training. I think that's a big thing.
Mateo, I know we want to be respectful of your time. I know you had like 20 interviews today. I have one last question for you. Is this win going to change your schedule at all? Any plans change, or is it too early to tell? I'm hoping you're still going to do like Flanders in that, because you almost won Het Volk, which is one of my favorite races. And those types of races are my favorite races to see an American.
George, it's Het Nieuwsblad. These guys don't know
what's going on. Okay, whatever. It was called that before. But I'd love to see you back there. I don't know if that's going to change your schedule at all, but what's up next for you?
No changes. That's one of the things this team doesn't do, is they don't change your schedule. They make a plan and they stick with it. And I also think it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to the classics. I do now. I have like 10 days before E3, and then I do E3, Dorsdorf, Landeren, Flanders, Roubaix, and Amstel. So that's kind of my block, and they're all races that I really look forward to. And after opening weekend, it's like, that was such a crazy, it's just, I had to pinch myself lining up with a team that strong in a race. Like, yeah, I think it's something that I can't take for granted, because it's not many times in my life maybe that I'll line up with that amount of firepower in one team. And that's also the team we have for a lot of the next classics. So I'm looking forward.
So Mateo, you've done three races with the team now, right? So you've done Nieuwsblad, you've done Kuurne and Carinis. So three out of three, right?
Yeah. Three out of three for the team. Yeah. Yeah. Not for me, but for the team. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. To finish, Mateo, I have to give you many regards and congratulations from Club Ciclista San Sebastián de los Reyes. I know you and your brother rode there when you were 9 and 10 years old, I guess. Your mother, I don't know if you know, but your mother wrote me about that, because my son is in the same club. So you are, of course, a big topic, and lots of congrats from everybody at the club.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I have good memories. Yeah, that was a cool, I spent like a semester or something in Spain. I was pretty young. I was like 9, but I have good memories from that. That was a really cool experience.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we really appreciate it, Mateo, and good luck for the rest of the year. We'll be watching and pulling for
thanks,
you.
Guys.
Yeah. Thanks, right, good luck. Thanks, Mateo.
Have a great day.
Yes. Okay, ciao, guys.
Okay. Ciao. Bye.
That was great, guys. We had winner of Paris-Nice. I think is this the first time ever we've had two Americans on the podium of Paris-Nice, Spencer?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, George. I think it might be the first time ever. I mean, is it the first? When's the last time two Americans finished on the podium of, let's say, like a top three 1 week stage race, like the Dauphiné, Paris-Nice, and Swiss? You know, like, has that ever happened? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty rare.
Yeah, no, it's like we keep saying, I mean, the American cycling is in a great position right now. And these guys are continuing to impress. And for me, it's Mateo's just so impressive, because he's racing the classic races too, like Flanders. I mean, he'll be up there most likely in Tour of Flanders. Winning a climbers race like Paris-Nice.
Imagine this. I mean, he did two races, the opening weekend in Belgium. You know what that is. I mean, it's a different kind of cycling. It's two different sports. And he just goes to Paris-Nice, shows up, actually states his intentions that he's ambitious for a podium, and then wins it. And in which way, you know, I mean, I was really impressed on the last stage. I mean, Remco tried. I mean, he did not move an inch. He was always, I mean, he was suffering, of course, but he was in control of the situation. We should have asked for his weight. I mean, he's a tall guy.
Yeah.
What do you think his weight? What do you think? How much he would weigh? Like 70 kilos?
I'd say he's, yeah, kilos. I'd say, yeah, like 72 kilos. My guess.
I wonder if he's lighter than that. I wonder if he's in the high 60s. I mean, he looks thin for his height.
Yeah, he's super, super lean. But what I think also really stood out to me was how his training has changed and how he's got a lot more energy for like normal life stuff. Going to the grocery store. I mean, we all
that
know
was interesting.
When you train hard, you can't do anything. Like, it's just amazing how dialed in this team has got the nutrition and the training. And of course, it's still incredibly hard, but the fact that you're able to recover more and just recover scientifically, where you were able to produce the work, adapt, and do it again, and win races like Paris-Nice is, you could see it in his face. He's happy. He's content with the team.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're going to see a lot more of him this year.
Yeah. I mean, for them, you know, like two stage wins and the overall, that's incredible. Another thing I wanted to talk about Paris-Nice is, you know, of course, Remco second wins the last stage. He was one of the big favorites, couldn't win because Jorgensen showed that he was stronger. McNulty confirming that he's on a really great level, but the disappointment of Primoz Roglic, you know, don't know if there was something wrong with him, but already at the beginning, they did race in the same circumstances as Visma and Sudal Quickstep, but they lost a lot more time. They were already 54 seconds down after the TTT, which is, you know, basically you can't win Paris-Nice anymore unless a miracle happens. And then we never saw actually Primoz in a situation where he really, I mean, he tried a few times, but it was very careful, very discreet. What happened? Is he not on the same level anymore since he left the team? What do you guys think? What do you think, George?
I don't know. I'm going to go back to, you know, the way a lot of these guys played it back in our day, where, you know, maybe they're just not. He's not going to put. He's got his big chance this year at the Tour. So in my mind, it'd be like, I won't put as much emphasis on trying to win every single race I entered like I have in the last couple of years. And maybe take it slightly easier to get the pressure off of me and then go all in for the Tour. That's kind of what I'm feeling. I have no idea, obviously, but I'm not too concerned. And I think once we get to the Tour, we'll see the best Primoz.
Well, Johan,
Let's hope so. Yeah.
2019, where he looked unbelievable through every early stage race, like maybe the best 1 week stage racer of all time through the first part of 2019. He gets to the, sorry, I hope I have this year right. Yeah, 2019. He gets to the Giro, and you could just see the air deflate out of him. You know, he was good for the first week, and he looked so bad for that second week. You know, I am slightly concerned. As the number one Primoz fan over here, I'm a little concerned about what I saw at Paris-Nice. That's as bad as we've seen him, I think, since he's been a high-level pro. But I do wonder if George is right and that he's just made the decision of the Tour is my, this is my chance to win the Tour. I'm not messing around. I'm just focusing on that. He's going to try the inverse of that 2019 where he just kind of slowly got worse and maybe building in an old fashioned way. Like who would think that not being at your best every race could help maybe. So that's the only thing I can come up with because It's a little shocking to see.
I mean, and let's be frank here. Does it really matter to his career if he wins another Paris-Nice or if he wins another Pays Basque? Or I mean, who cares? He's won everything there is to do except one race. So in my mind, it's like, let's go all in here because nothing else really matters anymore.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, it's once you are in a situation, let's say after the team time trial, and then you see how good these other guys are, I mean, Paris-Nice is always won or lost with very little time difference. So, you know, it kind of, the motivation goes away a little bit also. And then, you know, I mean, he was still, except the last stage, I don't know exactly what happened, if it was the cold or anything, but all the other stages, he was up there with all the favorites, right? It was just a matter of seconds here and there. But I think, I mean, I hadn't thought about that, George, but It could, you could be right. You know, I mean, he has won every single race that there is to be won. Old fashioned approach, you know, just slowly riding into it and try to be as good as possible at the Tour de France. So
I like it.
What else?
It's going to build I think it's going to build up the anticipation even more. And, you know, we got those two big races behind us and now we got the big one days coming up. Obviously a lot more in between as well, but it was some very exciting racing, and to see the Americans there on top, just really icing on the cake for us.
Johan, are you guys over at the Remco fan club? Are you concerned that Remco could not?
I'm not in the Remco fan club. I mean,
president and CEO.
I like it, but I'm also sometimes critical. I like Remco, but I'm the first one to be critical. You know, I mean, he's a great rider, but I still think that he has things to learn and to improve on tactically, and also, you know, this. I don't think he should do this. You know, the phone call and then hanging up.
Yeah,
he wins the stage.
No. And he kind of got gifted the stage, but like he didn't attack Jorgensen, and then Jorgensen didn't contest the stage because he already won. That was a little strange.
What was that about? The phone call hang up. Who was he hanging up on?
Man, it's the second time he does this year. He did it when he won his first race in Portugal. I don't know. Apparently it's a gesture that some football player did at some point. And I have no idea what it is, but I don't know. But it's just proper to the personality. It's, you know, it's okay. But
to put it into perspective, I thought Jorgensen was stronger on that final day. I thought if he won it, he probably could have dropped Remco. And Jorgensen is not only not leading Visma at the Tour, he's not even their like lead mountain domestique. That's Sepp Kuss. He's probably their third or fourth mountain domestique, and Remco couldn't beat him. I mean, as we say, this isn't the Tour. The Tour's later in the year, obviously. To me, that's concerning. And Soudal Quickstep, I mean, he was completely isolated on that final stage. They really just lost the wheel on the descent, on a wet descent. I would say I have some concerns about that team as Tour contenders based on this.
Well, I think Spencer, you know, it's no secret. I don't think we can put as for now, we can't put Remco at the same level as those clear Tour de France favorites, Jonas and Tadej and even Primoz. You know, I mean, I think he still has progress to make. And I think the Tour de France is going to be a learning process for him. We'll obviously see him, very active and aggressive, but I think top five would be a good goal for Remco. I don't think we should expect him to. I mean, in his mind, for sure, he wants to win. You know, these guys, when they start a race, they want to win.
Yeah, and he mentioned in his post race interview how he's already thinking about July. Won the last stage in Nice, where the Tour finishes. So I don't think his morale is any lower from his performance at Paris-Nice. I think he's all in for July, and he's clearly stating that, calling it out early. So it's shaping up to be a very exciting July, that's for sure.
Stage six was a howler. I mean, that was, as they would say in soccer, like to let a truck like Jorgensen and McNulty and Skelmoza go up the road. I don't understand that.
I mean, it happens.
He had to chase down Primoz. You only have so many matches in a race, and perhaps a moment of hesitation costing the race. But like you said, Spencer, once you give those guys 10 seconds, and like Mateo said, in those neighborhood roads, you're going full gas. It doesn't matter who's chasing you behind. You can only corner so fast. It was just a great tactical move by Mateo, and perhaps not a wise decision by Remco.
Yeah, agreed. All right, I think that's it, no?
Yeah. Great show, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Cool. We'll be back for Milano Sanremo very soon. Yep.
All right, who's the quick picks? I got Jonathan Milan. Spencer, who do you got?
I mean, I'm going to steal this from Johan. I think Vanderpool. He's so good when he focuses on this race.
Johan?
Okay. I'm Mats Pedersen.
Ooh, I like that.
All right. Good. I like it. Good picks, guys. We'll see you next week then.
Okay.
See you guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks. Right. Thanks, guys.